French v. Wachovia, 08-2197. And for the appellant, Mr. Apfeld.
May it please the Court. This case presents one substantive issue, which is, may a plaintiff who is otherwise obligated to arbitrate a controversy avoid that arbitration by dismissing, without prejudice, the claim embodying that controversy? The claim, the controversy that is in question, is embodied in count two of the original complaint. And on appeal, the plaintiffs do not argue that count two would not be arbitrable were it still pending. Instead, they place all of their eggs in one basket. That is, the proposition that, having been dismissed, claim two and the controversy that it represents is if it had been never raised at all. Well, that's not true, but even if it were true, it would not relieve the plaintiffs of their obligation to arbitrate. And there are a number of reasons for this. First and foremost, that as the United States Supreme Court has recently noted, the question of arbitrability depends upon the existence of a controversy and does not require the pendency of any claim or lawsuit. Indeed, the Federal Arbitration Act is phrased in terms of the existence of a controversy, and the arbitration clause in this case is framed in terms of the existence of a controversy. Moreover, the fact of the matter is that plaintiffs did raise this controversy. Having done so, having in essence let the genie out of the bottle, they may not put the genie back in again, at least not simply by a dismissal without prejudice. There are a number of decisions from this court dealing with the question of the finality of a decision, which establish very clearly that a dismissal without prejudice does not make the underlying controversy go away.
Well, I guess that leads to my trouble about the jurisdiction here, and that is, when the stay was lifted after the amendment of the complaint, wasn't that notice to you that if you wanted the arbitration, you needed to seek relief at that point? You should have appealed then.
Certainly that is the plaintiff's argument, but I don't think so. Had we appealed the day after that second decision, what would we have said? And what would you have said in response? We would stand here saying, well, we want you to command the district court to compel the plaintiffs to arbitrate, and you would have said, well, there is an order on file that compels them to arbitrate. We must understand there are three orders in this case. The first order, to generalize, said arbitrate count two, count number one is stayed pending arbitration. The second order said that count two is dismissed, or you may file an amended complaint that does not contain count two, and count one, the stay, is lifted. That is all it said. It said nothing about the pre-existing order to compel. Now, the bank believes...
It seems like pretty clear notice that that order is no longer valid. There's nothing to art. You know, there's no stay. There's nothing holding the litigation of count one up. So what you thought what you had, the compulsion order, is no longer in existence.
Well, first, it is absolutely clear that nothing in that order addresses it. It is also clear that the plaintiffs themselves did not seek it. And if they had, if in fact they were not dismissing with prejudice, as we now know they did not do, one would think that they should have sought some amendment of that. But whether or not they should have done it, whether or not we should have realized it, the fact of the matter is that the second order did not expressly address it, nor was it a logical necessity. That was vacating the order to arbitrate was not a logical necessity of the second order. It is as though if you had gone back to the first motion in which the banks moved to stay everything, the court had said, well, I'm going to stay count two, and I'm not going to stay count one. That was the state of affairs after the second order was entered. Now, should the bank have suspected that something was up? Should the bank have sought clarification? In hindsight, it certainly would have been more efficient to do so. But the fact of the matter is, at that moment in time, there was nothing that necessarily invalidated that first order. And there's no question that we are entitled to appeal as a matter of right an order refusing to compel arbitration. And the only order refusing to compel arbitration was the April 23rd, 2008 order, that is, the third order, which was appealed on a timely basis.
When the complaint was amended, actually before responsive pleadings, I understand it, right?
Yes, that's
okay,
correct.
Okay, so they've amended it down to one count.
Correct.
Would it still have been an appropriate response after that to ask for a stay pending the arbitration between the two entities that really the plaintiff was not interested in? I guess I'd say not interested in. The plaintiff was interested in the violation of fiduciary relationship, and then you get into this. I don't know what the arbitration was going to be about somebody's decision to override a previous insurance in place of and replace it with another. I guess that's what it was about. But I just wonder if it would still be appropriate to get a stay in order to arbitrate what I would call an internal issue.
Well, I'm not sure that it was an internal issue, but it certainly would have been appropriate to continue the stay of count one in place, even though the plaintiff had, in essence, dropped count two, because that was effectively the state of affairs. Count two was not going to be litigated one way or another. Why keep it around? And, in fact, the bank did oppose the motion to lift the stay, opposed it unsuccessfully.
But that was based on count two, wasn't it?
I'm sorry.
Wasn't that based on count two as it was pleaded? And then that was deleted? I'm trying to get some detail here. Just, it seemed to me that by the time the complaint was amended, it was a different, it was a narrower complaint.
Well, the only difference between the first and the second complaint is that count two was deleted and one paragraph of the preliminary recitation of facts, which contained a number of details relating to the alleged misrepresentation that was the basis for count two, was deleted. Other than that, there were no changes. I'm trying to answer your question. I think that it would have been appropriate to continue to stay litigation of count one because the controversy that was represented by the now dismissed count two had not gone away. Because count two was not dismissed with prejudice. There had been no adjudication or arbitration of the merits of count two. It was out there.
Did the amended complaint raise the same controversy?
The amended complaint arose out of the same controversy. The specific form of cause of action pleaded was different. But all of the preliminary paragraphs were essential.
I guess all I'm asking is, even if that was the original complaint, there still would have been a motion to stay pending an arbitration.
Oh, if count two, that depends upon whether or not we perceived that there was a controversy. I believe we probably would have, because we probably would have perceived that underlying this controversy was a complaint that fell within the within the terms of the arbitration clause. I believe that would have been the case.
Okay.
But in any event, Your Honor, it was only the April 23rd order that unequivocally refused to compel arbitration of the controversy underlying the by then dismissed count two, which controversy was very much alive. If I could, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the short remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Right. Ms. Is it Moen?
Moen.
Moen.
May it please the court. This court lacks jurisdiction over the appeal. The original order, the second order in this three orders that we've been discussing today, the second order clearly lifted the stay and allowed the case to proceed in litigation. The bank opposed that motion made by the plaintiffs. They said, no, the stay should not be lifted. The arbitration should go forward. The district court considered their arguments, rejected them, granted the motion, and lifted the stay. That was in October 2007. Under Rule 4, the bank had 30 days to file a notice of appeal from that order. The bank did not timely appeal that order. Instead, the bank waited an additional 30 days past that deadline and filed a renewed motion to compel arbitration. Nothing changed in the case between the October 2007 order and what later became the April 2008 order. A party cannot enlarge the time to appeal by avoiding the first deadline and then filing a second or a successive motion and then appealing the denial of the second motion. That's what happened here. They missed their deadline. They attempted to enlarge the deadline by filing a second motion and then appealing the denial of the second motion. Parties are not allowed to do an end run around Rule 4, and accordingly, the court lacks jurisdiction over this appeal. Even if the court had jurisdiction over the appeal, however, the court should deny the appeal. The bank has the burden to show that the district court abused its discretion in allowing the case to proceed and denying the motion to stay and compel. The bank has not met that burden. As the district court noted, there is only one claim in this case. There is one complaint, the amended complaint. It's been accepted. It's on file. It contains only count one. Count one is the breach of fiduciary duty claim, which the court held was not subject to arbitration. There is no count two. Accordingly, the district court did not abuse its discretion in ordering a non-arbitral claim to proceed in litigation, and this court should affirm the district court.
Now, it's not just counts that can be ordered to arbitration. It's disputes. Would you agree with that? That it's broader, what can be arbitrated under this agreement, or has to be arbitrated, it's broader than just counts in litigation?
Well, as an abstract matter, yes. But in this case, the district court examined the counts. And the court said one of these counts, breach of fiduciary duty, not subject to arbitration.
But they're underlying this are essentially the same facts. What was formerly count two, the facts supporting that were the same facts supporting count one for the most part.
Actually, the district court spent some time discussing the differences between count one and count two, and there are factual differences. Count one, breach of fiduciary duty, is directed against the bank as the trustee for a breach of the fiduciary duty of loyalty through self-dealing, and also a breach of its duty to reasonably administer and manage the trust. That's count one. Count two, on the other hand, the district court found, was based on what the bank did in conjunction, either directly or indirectly, through its affiliates. That was a statutory claim under Wisconsin State Statute 100.18. And the plaintiffs allege in count two that the bank, directly or indirectly through its affiliates, engaged in certain misleading or deceptive statements. And so, although both counts were contained in the original complaint, the factual predicates for the counts are different. And the district court, again, examined those issues, and that is why it based its determination in the initial order that count one was not subject to arbitration, even though count two was. It's an interesting case because this is not a situation where the plaintiffs signed the arbitration agreement. The arbitration agreement is between the bank and its affiliates. And so the district court noted that under the law and under principles of equity, a trustee cannot bind the beneficiaries of a trust to an arbitration agreement that the beneficiaries did not sign. But with regard to this other dispute, that involved the bank and its affiliates, the court held that the arbitration provision applied to that separate dispute with separate factual predicates, and therefore that count, count two, was subject to arbitration. But it's still held that count one was not.
Well, I asked the other side the same question, and that is, if with the amended complaint count, remaining count one, would there have been any basis for a stay in order for, whether it's internal or not, for bank and its affiliates to arbitrate in order to resolve the one count that remained?
Well, I think it's clear based from the district court order that no, there would have been no basis to bring a motion to stay and compel arbitration if only count one had been in the complaint, because the breach of fiduciary duty claim is clearly not subject to arbitration. And, in fact, today was the first time that the bank has raised this argument. Previously in the briefing, I'm sure you're aware that the bank said, well, the reason why they filed the second motion was because of this email that the bank's counsel sent to plaintiff's counsel. Today is the first time they said, well, we would have filed this at the very beginning. But even if the bank had, even if the initial complaint had contained only count one and the bank had filed a motion to stay and compel arbitration, the answer is no. That complaint would not have been subject to arbitration. It was not encompassed by the arbitration provision between the bank and its affiliates, and the beneficiaries of the trust, the plaintiffs, would be allowed to proceed with their breach of fiduciary duty claim. If the court has anything further?
Appears we do not. Thank you.
We ask the court to affirm.
All right. And how much time? 1 minute left remaining on rebuttal.
Your Honor, I think it's important to distinguish between the motion to compel and the motion to stay what is currently in the trial court. Counsel for plaintiffs have not dispelled the notion that there is in existence a controversy relating to what used to be their count two. It still exists. They haven't dismissed with prejudice. Whether or not there is a factual interrelationship between those two claims goes to the question of whether or not the remaining claim ought to be stayed. But it does not speak to the question of whether or not the controversy, which plaintiffs do not deny falls within the arbitration clause, should be ordered into arbitration. It should be. It is a controversy. It is live. It falls within the clause. And that being so, at the very minimum, the district court should be given the opportunity to reconsider its decision not to stay the remaining claim, since its decision not to stay was based upon an error of law. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll take that under advisement. And moving now to the fifth case.